Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show. Hi, welcome to the Desert Sanctuary Podcast. I'm Laura Forehand. I am here with Carl Forehand, and we have a very special guest. I feel like I say that every time, but you know what? I feel like we're so honored to have our guests here to share their stories with us, and today is no exception. We have Rachel Peach joining us today, and if you don't know that name, I hope that you we'll get to know that name. Rachel was in a documentary that was recently aired on, I think it was Investigation Discovery or something like that anyway, but it's called Let Us Pray, and very, very well done documentary that talks about abuse in the IFB. And so we are so grateful to have Rachel here today. I'm going to kind of kick it to you before we start talking to Rachel. But
yeah, the only note I have is just that Google Podcasts is discontinuing. If you've been listening to us on Google Podcasts, I assume you know, or that they've sent you a note that it's automatically switching over to YouTube Music. Appreciate every like and subscribe. You know, we're not the big numbers type of podcast, but we do like to know that somebody's listening and somebody's interested. So that helps us out psychologically and things like that. But that's not why we're here today. We're here to talk to Rachel.
Yeah.
Rachel, we consider stories to be sacred. That your story is something special, and we appreciate you having the confidence in us to trust us with your story. And so if you want to start off just telling us your story and whatever detail you think is appropriate, and we'll go from there. About that. Welcome.
Sure. So thank you so much for having me. So I grew up in a independent fundamental Baptist church, starting when I was a little tiny kid. I grew up on military base in Japan, actually. And it was a very good and positive experience. And so when we moved back to the States, I was, I don't know, maybe third grade or so. We were just going to continue that same church experience. And since we left on a very positive note, and we just Googled what the closest independent fundamental Baptist church was in Southern California, and popped up Faith Baptist Church in Wildomar. And so I started attending there. We got very involved right away. And as most churches are, it's a very welcoming community. You make friends very fast. And this was kind of the first time, especially growing up in a military family, you move around a lot. And this was going to be a permanent move. And so being around people that I can make friends with that I'm not going to have to say goodbye to in a year or two was very exciting. And so they immediately became my community Monday through Sunday. And we quickly started attending the Christian school there. And so I'm around these people. I'm with them every single day. And as a kid, I liked it. It was a fun experience, and there was things I didn't quite understand as far as rules and standards, but everyone else was doing it, and I want to keep my friends, so I'm going to go along with it too, even if I think it's a little weird or a little strange. And I quickly got very bought in and very brainwashed to the environment and the beliefs there. And around the time I was 9th or 10th grade, I was around 15 years old, the youth pastor at the church I can recognize it now as grooming. I did not see it then as that. Those lines were very slowly and quickly blurred, and he began sexually abusing me around the time I was in 10th grade. And that continued for a very long time. And me graduating high school and going to Bible college was a way of escape in a weird way, because I was not brave enough to end things or say anything or report anything. So my way of dealing with it was just acting like it didn't happen and moving away. And I went off to Bible college, and that was just like, I still did not fully process or understand what had just taken place the 3 years prior. And so then being put in another very toxic environment that would only enable men like him, was even worse on my mental health and healing and everything. And I only continued to blame myself even more going into my early adult years. And so my way of dealing with the trauma that had happened was acting like it never happened and putting it on the shelf, never going to be dealt with. And that's exactly what I did. And I went years not telling anyone. I never told anyone about anything that had happened. And there was always that thought in the back of my head that there's just no way I'm the only one. But it was still, as most abuse is, it's very isolating. And they're very good at convincing you that this was your fault. And so there's no reason to think that this would happen with someone else if this was my fault to begin with. Mm-hmm. I didn't look at him as someone to blame. I looked at myself as someone to blame. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until I was around maybe, I think I had just turned 25, and I suddenly had this shift in how I saw things. And I'm sure it was because I was getting a little bit older. And my husband is also 5 years older than me, so he was entering into his 30s. And I slowly saw, like, if something happened with my husband and a teenage girl, I'd be mad at my husband. Mm-hmm. I would not be mad at that teenage girl. Mm-hmm. And these were all internal thoughts that I was just having on my own. And they were extremely intrusive. So I know, like, I didn't want to be thinking about this, but I couldn't not think about it. And it was eating me alive that I didn't want, if I started to put blame on him and see what really happened, it meant this was a crime. This was illegal. This was something very horrible. And that only leads to more things I didn't want to deal with. And so it really was just kind of, I don't understand the timing of all of this, but I started having these thoughts. I started having these nightmares and these very intrusive thoughts and memories. And I knew my body and my brain was telling me it's time to deal with this, but I didn't want to accept it. And probably a month or so after I started having these thoughts, I'm suddenly approached by a girl, another girl who grew up in our youth department, and said, I was molested by the youth pastor and I don't know what to do.
Wow.
And it was like, I knew I needed that. I was never going to be the first one to come forward. And I knew that, I just knew I'm not going to be that person. But if son, I was telling myself, if there's someone else though, maybe I would. Like, but who knows, but I'm not going to be the one to entertain that. And sure enough, here she comes out of the blue with this allegation. And I knew right away, like, there's no way she's lying. Like, I know she's telling the truth. And from there, it really was just this domino effect of, okay, I guess I'll tell one person and see what happens from there. And, during that time, though, it was dealing with the trauma of accepting what happened and talking about it and wanting to come forward about it and maybe do something about it. And then the church got involved. And you would think that would be a good thing. And that should be, okay, I'm safe now. Everything's going to be fine. And instead, it was the complete opposite and had made the initial trauma even a million times worse. And that was an extra trauma none of us were expecting, was the reaction and the protection that the church brought him instead of us. And it was like, I'm watching my world that I once loved so dearly just crumble in front of my face, and there's nothing I can do about it. And trying to convince people that you, like, I loved dearly, I've known them since I was a child, you were my teacher, you were my Sunday school teacher, you were my best friend's parents, and you don't believe me. That was, I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible. And during that time, I had also decided I was not happy with how things were being handled. I was not happy with how things were, as I was finding out in real time, handled in the past with previous allegations. And so I made the decision to sue the church. And I knew that was only going to bring more problems, but I'm giving this opportunity to do something about it, and I need to be able to do something about it. And so I sued the church, and through a very long police investigation and a lot of other things that took place, he was eventually arrested. And the minute he was arrested, it didn't take long. He immediately pled guilty. There was no he said, she said. It was very cut and dry what had happened. And so at least on the criminal side, I was no longer sitting here being like, see, I told you. Like, it was very well known right away who was in the wrong there. And but the civil side, as far as the lawsuit, that took 5 years of litigation. And so that was another obviously very jarring experience, seeing again, people you loved dearly sitting in depositions that have nothing good to say about you, and trying to tear apart your character because of how you dressed in high school. And keep in mind, this is a very conservative Christian school with skirts to your knees and basically turtlenecks, but you know, it was still like, I remember the way she dressed. It was a little promiscuous, like as a child. And so, I mean, it was like a trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma, right, having to deal with and heal from and go through. And I will say, though, I'm sitting here almost 6 years later, and we had a criminal conviction. He's a lifetime sex offender now, and I could proudly say I won my lawsuit, and it was very evident who was liable and who was to blame in my case. And here I am now telling this story, and I'm still obviously still healing from it, but I'm in a very good place. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with I no longer have to prove who's telling the truth, and that was proved for me. And now it's I'm not waiting for, okay, when these people find out this, then they'll believe me. When they find out this information, then it's going to show. Finally, it was like, you know what? We're how many years deep now? If you don't believe me, you're never going to believe me, and it shouldn't matter to me anymore. And so, to make a very long story short, that is what brought me here today.
It's so jarring, though, right? When you, I mean, I was kind of having this visceral reaction while you were sharing that, because there's just something so jarring about this organization called the church that you, like you said, you have these deep connections, or so you think, with people, and they're your community, and they're, in some cases, they're your family. And then when push comes to shove, you know, you're the one who's not believed over the organization. And we talk about that a lot on this podcast, just how they, you know, a lot of times churches will go to the nth degree to save the reputation of the organization over the people that, you know, they claim to welcome and claim to love and claim to care for. And, you know, yeah. And instead they are harmed. Can I ask a quick question, kind of going back? Can you kind of let us in on what are some of the warning signs? You had talked about brainwashing and grooming. What were some of those, like looking back, what were some of those red flags now or warning signs that you can say, oh yeah, okay, you know, that was kind of some brainwashing going on or some grooming going on there during that time. Is there anything you can share with us?
So when it comes specifically with the abuser being my youth pastor, especially in this environment, it was so strict where you were not allowed, we weren't allowed to talk about movies. Mm-hmm. We weren't allowed, they were encouraged to not even own a television. I mean, it was a very controlled environment. Mm-hmm. However, when we were with, his name is Victor. When we were with Victor, we were allowed to talk about movies with him, but it was like an open secret that just don't tell anyone. But I can see now there is never, never a reason why an adult and an underage person have an open secret, that those two things don't even make sense.
Right.
And it was his way of trying to make you feel like you could trust him because he's not going to tell on you. And he would straight up tell me that. And it wasn't in a way where it was just him and I. There'd be a room with three or four of us in there. And he's like, okay, don't tell anyone that I'm showing you guys this, but watch, like, oh my gosh, watch this YouTube video. Or have you guys seen this movie yet? But you can't say anything. So saying it in a public setting where there's other people in the room, it feels normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that it's like, he's this fun, cool person. He's the trusted adult. He's not going to go tell on us. So then when he's saying these things in front of other people, when you're by yourself with him, and he's saying, hey, you can't tell anyone this, but you look really cute today. Mm. That is all grooming, but I'm not like, I mean, that is kind of weird, but like he says the same kind of thing. I mean, not as bold, but you know, in a public way. And I know that they are so smart about making you feel like this is okay, even though that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And it was his way of using the rules to his advantage almost. Mm-hmm. He knows that we want to be rebellious and have fun, and we can't do it with the other adults, but we can do it with him. Okay. So then that line slowly just gets pushed and pushed and pushed until there is no line. And you can't even recognize when you crossed it because it's been pushed that far for that long.
I think that's the thing about grooming and manipulation and things like that. It's like this slow, I mean, it may seem fast, but it's also very slow and methodical, to where, like you're saying, like everything becomes somehow, and of course you're a child, you know, he's the adult, but so it becomes these, like you said, these lines get very blurred. But it's almost like the slow progression, you know, is what I'm thinking based on like so many of the stories that we've heard. So yes. Would you say that's probably true? I mean, I definitely, in fact, on the last podcast we did, got pretty angry because the whole, well, what was she wearing kind of thing, just that infuriates me. It just infuriates me. These are children, and the adults know better, and they're taking advantage. And so let's call it what it is. It's manipulation. It's criminal, really.
Something that definitely, like, I remember this moment so clear. My detective on my case, who I'm very close with now, and literally it was like a guardian angel in my life. And I was I remember when I first came forward, I was definitely still dealing with so much guilt and shame that I don't think I even realized I had still. And I made a comment about, like, I don't know, they're probably like, just be careful who you talk to, because I was kind of the troublemaker or like the bad kid in high school. I'm like, so I'm sure they'll paint me as, so I don't know. Like I was just warning him, like, I wasn't Miss Little Miss Baptist Perfect Girl. I'm like, I got in trouble all the time. And he goes, Rachel, I don't care if you walked into his office butt naked and begged him to have sex with you. He's an adult. You're a child. The end. And he goes, I don't care if you begged and begged and begged. And he's finally said, okay, fine. He would still be in the wrong because he's an adult and he's a person in power, a teacher, a pastor. And he says, we have those in set in place because we know better not to do things like that. And if you don't know better, you're in the wrong.
That's
and
right.
I'm like, no, like, I didn't do that. I'm like, it wasn't like that. He's like, I'm telling you, this is how the normal people look at it. It's there's never a, well, she did do this. Well, she was wearing this. Well, she did act like that. Doesn't matter.
That's right.
And I needed to hear that, because I'm like, you're right. That, and especially now, I think I've come to a lot of healing. I definitely do not blame myself whatsoever anymore. And I think a huge part was entering my 30s, and I'm not even too close to his age that he was when things started. And even as a young 30-year-old, I look at teenagers and I can't stand being around them because they're children.
Right. Right.
And I'm like, there's nothing about this that I am appealed to.
Right.
This is disgusting. This is a child. And I finally was able to see myself as that. And I know age can bring that, but that definitely helped a lot of, yeah, I don't blame myself whatsoever. Good. That was not okay.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share a story when we used to do jail ministry, and I hope this is not triggering, but
no, you're fine.
They especially said to the women, said, be careful, because here's what happens. So a convict says, you know, I ran out of paper. Can you get me some paper? Even though you're not, you know, I want to study the Bible and I want to write down some memory verses and stuff, even though that she's not supposed to give them paper. So then the second time, you know, well, you got it for me before. Why can't you do it now? Maybe I'll just tell them what you did and you won't be able to do this anymore. And in kind of a similar way, that was what led to where one woman was eventually sleeping with the convict, because she couldn't get out of it. Yeah, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And we'll keep this a secret. You know, maybe, you know, the favorite uncle gives the child candies. Well, don't tell your mom. You know, your parents didn't want you to have candy, so don't tell. But I'll let you have it, and then that creates a bond. You know. A trauma bond, or whatever you want to call that. My question is about when you start to trust people. You said one at a time that you would ask them, you kind of share, and then you'd see if it's all right. But how do you know who to trust?
So, are you talking about with coming forward?
Yeah, with telling your story, and you know, and trying to do something about this. How do you know who to trust?
I feel like my story is a little different, because I definitely feel like I was kind of forced into having to do something about it. I knew I needed to, but I did not want to. And I was like, no, that's not something you can take back. And so even when that other girl approached me that something had happened to her, she asked me, did anything happen to you? And I said, no, I was not even close to being ready to say anything. I knew I could trust her because of what she's telling me right now, but I was more scared. And so the first person I told was my detective when I called him and came forward. And I'm happy it worked that way because there's no emotions between us because I don't know this person. And I was scared of seeing an emotional response because I was not ready to deal with an emotional response from someone. I hadn't even told my husband.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And so as far as knowing who to trust, I was scared to tell anyone because I was not prepared to have to defend myself. And I'm like, if I'm going to tell someone, I need to know they're going to believe me 100% and I don't have to convince them I'm telling the truth. And with my detective, I'm like, I mean, this is his job to figure out the truth. And so whether he believes me or not, that didn't matter to me. And so when I told my husband, I knew, I mean, he's going to believe me. And then I finally told a close friend because I knew she's going to believe me. I was so careful about telling anyone because I was not mentally ready to be like, no, I'm telling the truth. I swear, like, this happened and this happened. No, I wasn't going to do that. It was either you believe me or you're not. And if you don't, then you're not going to find out about this. And I had eventually, I mean, considering the situation, I didn't want him. I was very careful about who I was telling because he didn't know that I had come forward. And I didn't want it getting back to him because he was not arrested yet. And in his mind, he was thinking he got away with it.
Yeah.
He was totally free. Nothing's going to happen. And I wanted him to think that. And so if he found out I was talking with the police, I was scared that he would kill himself or something or hurt someone else. I don't know. But I'm like, I don't even want to entertain those thoughts. So I kept it to myself for probably a good month or so. And then we had eventually actually just come forward publicly, mainly because the church was involved at this time. And if someone's going to tell my story, it's going to be me. And I did not want the church their whole narrative getting involved. So that was our decision to come forward publicly on Facebook so that if you're hearing anything, you're hearing it from me, not anybody else.
Good idea.
So these pastors protected these youth pastors or other pastors, moved them around, did things like that. The pastor that was involved in what was your interaction like with the pastor of that church, or did you ever confront him or talk to him about it or anything?
So with this situation specifically, no. Growing up, I was actually used to be very close with him, and I had many good memories with him. And he was at every single camp. He was at many different activities, and I felt like him and I had a very good relationship. I never thought that there would be a reason why he wouldn't believe me or anyone. And there was a situation during my college years where something had happened with that youth pastor and a very, very close friend of mine. She was an adult at the time, but it was reported to him and nobody knew about this situation. But because of that, I was close with her, I did. And he completely covered it up. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I kind of looked at him like, you're kidding me right now. Like, you're better than this. You know better than this. And that was when I definitely started having this shift of like, I don't think you're as good as the person as I thought you were. And so it was right after then I completely stopped going to Faith Baptist because of that situation. I was so upset with how he handled it. And it was a huge reminder in my face, like, yeah, see, if you're going to say anything, this is what he's going to do. And so when years, it wasn't even a couple years later when this hit the fan, and I find out that he had known about Victor and a 13-year-old girl for almost 6-7 months now, and he did absolutely nothing. I didn't see a reason to speak with him. It spoke for itself. Yeah. That it doesn't matter what. And the person that reported it to him was the chairman of the deacon board. This was someone that, I mean, that's a very respected position in a Baptist church. Mm-hmm. And if you can't believe him, then who are you? You're going to believe me? No. And so him and I have not spoken, and I'm never getting that apology from him. And I'm done holding my breath waiting for that to come one day, because I truly think in his mind, he thinks he did absolutely nothing wrong. And I really think that he has forced himself to believe that he is innocent and did nothing wrong. And I'll let him just keep living in that delusion.
So maybe you guys know the answer to this question. I don't know. As a teacher, I'm a mandated reporter. And so are pastors mandated reporters?
Yes, they are.
So then I would think that if the pastor knew and did nothing about it, that somehow there's some responsibility there. But
so, yes. And his excuse out of that is during when the report was brought to him, Victor was no longer employed by him. And so he didn't feel it was his responsibility anymore. It's somebody else's responsibility, but it's not his.
Because they moved him.
Exactly.
So lame.
So also, I get this. We listen to so many. We listen to the Mormon stories. We also listen to Shiny Happy People. Mm-hmm. And Let Us Pray that you're involved with. And I get the stories mixed up. But there was a young lady who kind of confronted the pastor, and he left her out to talk to his wife, and the pastor's wife was just kind of railing on this girl, saying, "What are you doing to our church? You know, what are you doing to my husband?" and encouraging her to just suck it up and get on with life or whatever. And I, you know, you get really angry at that pastor's wife, but you also, there's a part of you that feels for them, because we just interviewed an ex-pastor's wife who there's all kinds of things going on in her story. But she finally said, "I'm not keeping your secrets anymore." Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think he went to jail too. Mm-hmm. So, but it's, man, is there always, this is the question I want to ask, is there always a price to telling your story? Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems like the most unfair thing about the whole thing is, you know, people tend not to believe you, yet you've got so much to lose and a lot to gain. I mean, there's both. But it's going to cost you. Did it cost you? Does it always cost you to speak up?
So I could be wrong, but in my circle of survivor friends that I have and have made over the last 5 years, and the stories that I have seen come out over the last 5 to 10 years, I have yet to see a story where a survivor comes forward and she is immediately believed, immediately supported, immediately does. I have not seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I could be wrong. Maybe there's a situation where that did happen. I have not seen it. In every situation I have seen, it is us having to beg the church to do something, get involved somehow, believe me, talk to me, pick up the phone and call the police, do something. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to see that happen. I'm hoping that with how public we have been over the last few years, and especially, you know, with Let Us Pray, I hope it's a huge wake-up call to church leaders and even church members. I mean, you're the voice too,
right,
that reacts to these allegations. And I hope that it's a wake-up call that the people that you love so dearly and look up to so dearly are capable of these things. And you don't see what can happen behind closed doors. And so there's no reason to immediately go on Facebook and tell us what a liar we are or stop spreading the gossip. It's like, what's the point of that? And so I hope that that's the change that we could bring, is just your initial reaction to these things is, hold on, let's take a step back here. Maybe they're telling the truth.
Right.
And I have also not really seen a situation where someone has come forward in a church environment and we've been able to prove that they were lying.
Right.
That has not happened. And so I think we could risk believing them. And see what happens and comes from it, instead of immediately assuming they're lying.
Because it costs you so much, and you've kind of described how it feels. You used several words in your story that talked about how it felt, and how much it costs you, and how, you know, everything you've got to go through just to admit people that are supposed to be about truth to admit the truth, and to take responsibility and ownership for it, and fix their own problems, you know, clean up their own messes. When I saw you guys protesting at First Baptist Hammond, when I was a kid, my mom and dad were in an IFB church, and they worshiped Jack Hiles, you know, and I watched you guys protest. I didn't see a single person from the church reach out to you in love. The church is still pretty huge, right? Big, ominous building, and they've been avoided coming out to face you. It's so sad, and it's such a giant picture of what the problem is.
Absolutely.
It's a big, huge corporation that can't afford bad press.
I feel like when it comes, especially with Hiles, and especially, like, I don't know, there's a certain generation where if you, in order to accept the bad that was Jack Hiles, you have to reevaluate so much of your own beliefs.
Right.
And people don't want to do that, because that's a very hard thing to accept, that maybe everything I based my beliefs off of is all a lie and all a fraud. And it is way easier to just ignore that and keep living your happy little life, not acknowledging the giant elephant in the room. And I think that's the easy way out. It's easier to believe that none of this is true, and my beliefs are, they're all godly, they're all spiritual, blah, 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 when in reality, it is linked to a very dark and sinister person. And people don't want to accept that.
I think there's so much truth in that.
Because that's what starts deconstructing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even when we first started, you know, deconstructing, and like you, I don't know, I've just always been very guarded in who I will tell my story to. And so, but even like just sharing things about the church that were just not sitting right with me, you know, with other people, you know, the first thing they say is, well, that's, I'm sorry that happened to you, but that doesn't happen at our church. I'm like, are you sure? Like, are you sure? Because I just really, you know, I just really doubt. We've heard so many stories that just, there's so many things that intersect with one another. I almost said parallel, and I'm like, parallel is wrong. But that intersect, like stories that have so many shared facets to them, that I cannot believe that the one church that somebody goes to is the perfect church. Like, your building is the only building that none of this crap happens in. I just, you know.
Well, and I get so frustrated with that statement because saying, look, that's never happened in my church. Well, you don't know that, especially when you are not, if you're not in the in crowd or privy to that information. And most of the time, in a lot of these situations, it was handled by the pastor and the abuser, the end. There was no, I mean, maybe sometimes there was deacons or elders involved. Very, very rarely. It's handled with the person involved and that's it, and never to be talked about. So there is no way that you can confidently say, well, that would never happen here, or that's never happened in my church. Because there was so much abuse and cover up that happened at Faith that is just now still coming out. And it's been how many years ago since it happened? So I don't know. I just, that is such a naive an arrogant statement to make. And I mean, you can hope that it didn't happen, but to confidently say it never did, you don't know that.
Right.
The fact that it happened somewhere should be somewhat of a concern to you, even if you,
are a Christian.
Yes.
That should be a concern.
Yeah, if you're a person, it should matter to you.
Right. That there are people being abused somewhere, that should
If my my neighbor was raping his wife and beating his wife, it doesn't mean it's horrible. It would be horrible for me to say, well, I'm not beating my wife. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sexually assaulting my wife. So
we're just going to pretend like it's not happening.
And exactly.
You're getting me fired up.
I know. Yeah.
Because, you know, we tend to, when people are charismatic and they entertain us, mm-hmm. we tend to protect them at all costs, because if they left, maybe our church would die. You know, whatever the thinking is, kind of subconscious thinking. But I've gotten to the point where if I ever went back to church, and I have to go without Laura,
I'm first not of going. All,
but if I ever went back, I would be totally suspicious of the pastor on day one. He's not on a high level of accountability, mm-hmm. Especially if he's popular and he can speak well, or she can speak well.
And that's coming from you, who was a pastor for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it's not like you're saying, you're pointing the finger at pastors. You're saying, I was a pastor, and I see how easy it is to fall into those narcissistic tendencies. And
it's very easy, because they love bomb you when you come in, just mm-hmm. like you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, you know, then you start getting that praise, that feedback, that adrenaline rush and all that. And you want to keep it going at all costs. And if you have some level of success, it makes it worse, mm-hmm. because then you want to protect what we've done, you know, what we've accomplished.
Well, and what you just said, like you mentioned something about, even if you go, you would still be on guard. And that really resonated with me, because we tried a couple different non-denominational, and I really did like this last one. It's been years now since we've been, and I liked the environment. I liked the pastor, but it was like, it didn't matter. None of that mattered though. In my mind, I'm sitting there the whole time, like, at any moment, you can screw me over again. There's nothing stopping you from doing that to me or to somebody else. And it's like, I could not shake that out of my head. And I even met with him personally and like told him my story and was like, if someone came to you right now, what would you do? And he was like, I would immediately call the police. Like, we have every policy in place. We did this, we do this. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, okay, I liked those answers, but I still walked away like, I don't believe him. Until, what if it's his kid? What if it's his brother? What if it's so-and-so that's accused? Would he still do it? And it's like, I felt like it's not fair for him, for me to be here. He can be the most pure person and have the best intentions, but in my mind, I'm always going to think, you're going to screw me over just because of what I've been through. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I don't belong in church. And that is 100% okay. There is nothing wrong with that. If I'm only hurting myself or hurting my opinion of you because of my past, this is not healthy for me. And I just hate that survivors from not just sexual abuse, any kind of abuse when it comes to religious trauma, we're the only survivors that are expected to return to the scene of the crime every single week and be okay with it. And I am not on board with that. I do not subscribe to that mindset anymore. I'm like, you know what? If that's your expectations, keep your church. I want nothing to do with it anymore. I just wanted to add that in there.
No, because I totally resonate with that. And that is so true about, you know, because we did a podcast and the person we were interviewing said, she calls it the F word. We are expected to forgive, right? I mean, that's what Christians do. We forgive. And so there's no accountability. And so who's re-traumatized? The victim. The victim is re-traumatized every time you ask them to forgive without any type of accountability. And then, like you said, they return to the scene of the crime. They're going to be re-traumatized every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah. What really good point.
What you're asking them to do is build up resistance to it. And that's not going to happen.
But I'm going to go back to your story, because subconsciously you probably did that for a long time until you couldn't anymore, because that's what the body does. The body holds on to that trauma and it's coming out. Someday it's coming out. And, you know, I'm grateful for your story and that it did come out. I mean, as hard as that was, I don't want to make light of that, but to see how you were able to not only help in your healing, but healing and preventing him from hopefully offending somebody else, you know, sexually assaulting somebody else. It's hard.
Rachel, thank you for joining us today and sharing your story. We always ask people one question and we never prepare them for it. It's a hard question, but it's totally what you think. So if you had a billboard that everybody in the world could see, what would you write on your billboard?
I try to live my life this way so that people could see this about me. And so I guess in a very long sentence, when people look at me or look at a billboard of my life, I want them to know you can still be happy and have so much fun and have the best life that you could live even after abuse and trauma and coming forward and losing the whole community that you once had. It's going to suck for a long time. And then one day you're going to wake up and it's not going to suck anymore. And I guess that would be my billboard. One day you'll wake up and it won't suck anymore.
I like that.
Yeah. But notice that you said, you know, after the work.
Right.
You
know,
yes.
It takes some work. Yeah.
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 How can people find you? So are you on social media?
I am. Yes. Yeah. So I at the moment I've kind of taken a step back with some advocacy stuff because, let us pray, vulnerability hangover was real.
Sure.
But I'm on Facebook, just Rachel Peach. And I'm more myself on Instagram, but I don't know if I want everyone seeing that.
That's okay.
But you can find me on Facebook.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
I think that's about it. So
that was good.
For the listeners, so thank you for listening to Survivor Stories, especially men. I strongly want to encourage more men to hear survivor stories. After we did the conference, a couple of the women speakers said very forcefully, you guys listen to sermons, you listen to books about sermons, listen to books about theology, books about leadership. But her one suggestion to men was to listen to survivor stories.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura and I want to deeply encourage you to do that. That's one of the reasons we help facilitate them. But we thank you for tuning in. We appreciate every one of you. And as always, we encourage you to be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary Podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Papios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward Conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.